Welcome to this episode of The Chandeliers. On this episode, we'll be talking about the Subaru Forester. It is a wagon. That's the body style of the car. And Subaru is a Japanese automotive company. They barely, in the 1990s, started to gain traction here in the U.S. The reason I chose the Subaru Forester is because I personally like it. It's, well, you know, it has its own reasons. Everybody has their own personal reasons as to why they like each vehicle. But specifically mine is for one model that they released only for one generation. And, you know, along with that, I'll be talking about how they gained traction here in the U.S. and how it came to be such a popular vehicle for, almost anybody in America. What really stands out to the vehicle, or about the vehicle, is its versatility. If you really are an outdoorsy person and you want to hit the dirt roads, but you want to be a little bit different, you know, not your typical Jeep or off-road vehicle, but you also have the option of lining up next to a muscle car or a sports car of the day back then. You know, cars, horsepower seemed 200, seemed like more than enough back in the day. And you could do that with a Subaru Forester. They had a turbocharged option, all-wheel drive sleeper. If you don't know what the term sleeper means, you know, it's pretty much what it entails. It is a vehicle that most people sleep on. They probably don't think it's fast. It's just like any other typical car. But when you line up against it on the street or at the track, it can potentially give you a run for its money. They made one for everybody. They made it for soccer moms, surfer dudes out in California, you know, from coast to coast. I even see students driving them in college. I personally know people who own them. It ranges from person to person. It could go to a liberal arts college professor or just anybody who is looking for a reliable new daily driver. You know, the Subaru Forester is there. Speaking on me personally knowing somebody who owns a Subaru Forester, you know, it's pretty comfortable. I haven't ridden in one of the more newer ones, but one of the older ones, you know, 90 seats were pretty comfortable, especially in the early 2000s. They were like cloth seats. Now, when talking about when the Forester came to be, it was in the mid-90s. You know, culture back then was Levi's jeans, the silver tab jeans, what nowadays, you know, the kids these days can refer to as mom jeans. Tupac was big back then. You know, it was good vibes, 90s vibes. I personally have you know, I love the 90s. It's kind of nostalgic, even though I didn't necessarily grow up in the 90s. Most of the 90s culture, you know, I would say overlapped or carried over ever so slightly into the early 2000s. And I was, you know, old enough or born early enough, which was 99, to experience those few technologies that were in the 90s. And not everybody's going to be purchasing a brand new car off the lot. So when I was introduced to vehicles, you know, it was just cars of the 90s, because growing up, my dad actually purchased a 1997 Suburban. So although the interior is more modern than previous Suburban models, it still had, you know, that old technology that that is different compared to cars made in 2005 and beyond. SUVs like the Jeep Cherokee and the Ford Explorer were already hugely popular. You know, they were four-door trucks, SUVs that Americans could use. It shifted from the conventional two-door Tahoes and the two-door Jeeps to four doors as it became more family friendly, and that's really what the market was looking for in America. And Subaru didn't make these SUVs. They were more known for making these small, quirky cars since, it's a Japanese automotive company. Most of their inspiration is from Japan, where they're more used to having smaller cars. Their streets are smaller. Not even that, some don't even use vehicles. It's either by foot or bikes, motorcycles. And the only car they really had to their name was the SVX, which was just a cool little two-door sports car that had racing windows in it. If you actually search it up, it's a cool little car. It's turbocharged. Since Subaru didn't have any SUV, practically what they did have in competition was the Subaru Legacy Outback, which is what the Forester is kind of based on, which I'll get into further explanation. The Legacy Outback was beginning to outsell Honda CR-Vs and Toyota RAV4s, which are mid-size, crossover SUVs. They're just smaller, more conventional. Just think about an American SUV compacted into a Japanese vehicle. And it's no wonder that these vehicles, like the Honda CR-V, came with picnic tables in the back. It was meant for American families who wanted the size of a truck and the ground clearance of being able to go over things like a truck. Yet it was still small and conventional, and was conventional for family things, much like picnics. When I say it came with a picnic table, almost every car or vehicle that I could think of in the trunk has a tray. The trunk, the cargo area space, it has that. But if you lift up the actual floor of that cargo area space, that's where you'll typically find a spare tire or just extra room to put in whatever you need or hide. Now, besides portable furniture, fuel economy was also a big factor. People were starting to move from trucks to these crossovers because, one, trucks were big and bulky. They typically were only used for work. It was just like a single cab and a bed. And the handling of the crossovers was just better overall than a truck and the SUVs of this time. Subaru product planners, they noticed this. They said, why don't we make a boxy wagon, much like the wagons were a big thing in America in the 90s. But they were huge. They were boats. So what they wanted to do was make a boxy wagon, but put it on a small platform car, which, they already had a boxy wagon, which was the Outback, but they just wanted to make it on a more, not conventional, but a smaller car, since smaller crossover SUVs were starting to take over the market. And they said, why don't we just jack up the ride height a little bit, for extra ground clearance. And they loved it, the idea, they loved it. I'm not saying that consumers did, but the product planners. And this is what really breaks my heart. They also probably were saying, why don't we make an STI version? Totally cool. It'll be turbocharged, total sleeper wagon. But hey, let's not send it to America. Let's just keep it exclusively here in the Japan. And yeah, that's what they did. I guess they thought that was a good idea. Which I guess, looking at it from a company standpoint, I guess it's a safer route since their Outback wasn't gaining any traction. So they decided to take a leap of faith. And in the 1995 Tokyo Motor Show, they showed their first concept of the Forester, and they didn't have the name Forester when they showed it or presented it. They called it the Striga. Once they took their shot, they went to the 1995 Tokyo Motor Show, where they debuted their concept of the Forester. Back then, it wasn't called the Forester; they called it a Striga. So, Subaru, they took the shot. They said, "Let's do it." They debuted the concept of the Forester in the 1995 Tokyo Motor Show as the Striga. It actually wasn't called the Forester, So, this is what the vehicle is called, pre-concept, pre-launch. And when it did finally launch, it was in 1998. And that's when they debuted the car as the Forester. They accordingly adjusted the name, making it sound more outdoorsy, which it does as is. And it helps, bring that market of people that are into the outdoorsy off-road stuff, and they think of a Forester, it looks exactly what they need for. This new crossover was a tall, fishbowl looking like vehicle that had high seating, which is what every person that had a truck but didn't want a truck want. They had the visibility they want, they had the ride quality of an SUV without all the bulk. And since it was a what was it, a shorter based car, on a smaller frame, it had a lower center of gravity due to its lower boxer engine, where the engine was placed. And it was doing so allowed for the vehicle to have way less rollover, or the possibility of rolling over on a sharp turn, which the Ford Explorers of the day back then had a high rate of flipping over, as you could see if you search up Ford Explorer safety testing, crash testing. When I looked and checked the crash test ratings on the Subaru Forester, they passed with flying colors. From what I could tell, it either was totally safe or almost safe. I think there's like four levels to the safety, and those levels that it had were green and yellow. So green would be good, A is acceptable, M is marginal, and P is poor. For the most part, it had a good reviews and evaluations on the crash safety testing. It only had about two that were acceptable, so that goes to show a lot about the safety of the vehicle. And since it was so safe, it was actually the only crossover that wasn't required to have the rollover warning on a sun visor, just like most vehicles have a airbag deployment warning on the sun visor. They had one on the vehicles like the Ford Explorer, since they were prone to rolling over. Now, talking about what came with the vehicle, in the first generation of the Forester, under the hood, it came a turbocharged 2-liter EJ20G boxer engine, and it made 250 horsepower, which, as I said previously, back in the day, that's quite a lot. But we didn't get that here in America. That was only in Japan. That was the their version. And that's really what breaks my heart and Subaru Forester enthusiasts. What the Americans got was a 2.5-liter EJ25 boxer 4 with 160 horsepowers, and it was naturally aspirated, meaning it didn't come with a turbo. But it did come with a 5-speed manual transmission. Manuals were still big back in the day. Sadly, not a lot of people drive manuals now because it's not conventional, especially in city driving. But I think it's a wonderful, useful skill to have, because you never know when you'll need to drive a manual vehicle. Unlike the Impreza of the time, every Forester came with all-wheel drive, meaning, better off-road capabilities. The S-Trim got a sportier fascia, a limited slip differential, and a set of 16-inch alloy wheels, because, S stands for sport. Now, the dealer option packages for, any other Subaru, I'm not sure if it included the sport, which I'm pretty sure it easily could, but any other base Forester, you had dealer option packages for off-road rugged stuff like the brush guard, the rear diff skid plate to protect that diff from any rocks or debris. And it also came with a dash top gauge pack with an altimeter and a barometer, as well as a digital compass for those who like camping, I guess, and getting lost. That's pretty sick. When we're talking about cargo space in the back, it has 65 cubic inches of cargo space. So this thing can haul stuff. It was like a pickup truck that was a car that was completely enclosed in a wagon, and it had a low center of gravity that handled like a car, and it was safe. Now we get to the year 2000 in Japan. It started to get the sportier variants of the Forester. It included suspension mods, bigger brakes, and a body kit. Subaru made 800 of the super limited STI 2s, Type M's, that came with gold BBS wheels and an ECU so good that it made a 5.80 to 60. Now, if you don't know whether that's fast or not, I guess I would say check whatever vehicle you drive or any vehicle that comes to the top of your mind that obviously isn't like a sports vehicle, it's just like a regular daily driver. And check the stats on it or the specs on it. 0 to 60. You know, everybody has their own reason for their vehicle and their use. But, you know, for a sport vehicle of this age, that was quite fast. Meanwhile, in the US, the Subaru Forester was what everybody wants, right? Practical, safe, affordable, capable. No, that's wrong. Now that's boring, at least for me. For Americans, that's amazing. But we got the most boring part of it. The automotive press loved it. You know, Consumer Reports, Car and Driver, they called it the best small SUV. And, you know, I guess it goes to show that it was, it really suited the American market, but it was boring. It did what it was supposed to do. It was safe. And, you know, that's not what the majority of car enthusiasts, like myself, are interested in. The era was ever so changing, and music was changing, culture was changing, and the Subaru still wasn't selling a whole lot of cars in America. And it was competing against, you know, automotive industries just like Honda, Toyota, and Ford. And they were losing. They desperately needed more buyers. So what they did was they hired an ad company, Wieden and Kennedy, which, if you didn't know, I personally didn't know either, but they're the ones that came up with the Just Do It slogan for Nike. And you can see how well that took off and how it's still sticking to this day. Everybody knows the company by Just Do It. So their job was to make Subarus look cool. But they had a 2-year contract, and after a year of that contract, they ended up just breaking the deal. They both entities didn't want to work with each other because, you know, they paid a lot of money to Wieden and Kennedy, and they didn't get any sales. Actually, they saw a decrease in sales. So they hired a smaller firm called Mulryan and Nash, and they said they could figure out how to sell the Forester to a new niche market. What they did was they started looking into who was buying their cars, you know, the stats, the marketing, and all that. And as one would assume, since it was all-wheel drive vehicles, they were selling well up north in places in the Pacific Northwest, up in New England, places that dealt with snow, you know. And that makes sense. It's snowy, rainy. They need the 4x4 capabilities, especially if it's in landscapes that include hills, rural areas as well. What was less than expected was that around of 80% of those buyers were women. So they didn't stop there. They went deeper into it. So what they saw and less expected from doing all this research was that 80% of the buyers in those places were women. And after placing a couple polls, Q&As, and surveys, they confirmed that most of the people that were buying the Foresters were indeed lesbians. And, you know, it may sound as cliche because I honestly, in the car community, never really heard that the stereotype that lesbians drive Foresters. But I did hear it once. I didn't think any of it and never really heard about it since. And it wasn't until now that I started looking into the Forester that I found out that it wasn't a stereotype, it actually was true. And, you know, LGBT women were 4 times more likely to own a Subaru than any other demographic of the population. Mulryan and Nash, they specialized in such niche advertising, and they came up with a solution to increase sales within this demographic. Their first print ad featured a Subaru climbing over a rock, you know, a typical 90s ad of the vehicle over a rock with the horizon in the background, looking like it can overcome anything. What the ad proclaimed was, "It loves camping, dogs, and long-term commitment. Too bad it's only a car," end quote. And that's what made their sales go off. They featured slogans that sounded good, but you know, if you were straight, you wouldn't really get what they meant. It was just another ad to you. That's why, since it was such a niche market, only those of the LGBT community would be able to, you know, decipher what they were saying. It was a subtle wink, but an invitation to come enjoy this ride and come purchase it. And you know, they had a really extremely loyal customer base, consumer base. Now, in 2000, further, Subaru hired Martina Navratilova to appear on Forrester billboards and magazines and commercials to promote it. And for those of you who don't know who Martina is, she is a Czechoslovakian American-born tennis player who is also lesbian. She has a wife. On this network TV, she was, you know, giving commercials and billboards and pushing out this vehicle. And some buyers and dealers pushed back when this happened, but you know, once sales went up, you couldn't really do much about it if you weren't already joining in on the wave. You were losing out. And this ad campaign has really taught a lot, since it was so influential, and it really helped Subaru. Now, the second generation of the Forester came out looking exactly almost like the first. It was just, you know, updated. It had a new rear end, and the headlights were more triangular, if you may. And it was still passing every crash test, earning the top safety rating of the year. And you know, this is what most people are concerned about, right? When looking for a car, you want it to be safe. Not everybody. So in America, they had released the Forester XT. XT stand for, well, the X and XT stands for all-wheel drive, as almost any car does when it has an X in it. And the T stand for turbo, which finally they included in American dealerships in 2004. Under the hood was a turbocharged 2.5-liter EJ255 boxer 4, making 210 buff horsepowers, and it had a ton of turbo capability. You know, drivers who wanted all the performance of a Subaru WRX, but still wanted the capability of a Forester and still looking, you know, formal to an extent. That's what the Forester XT was for. It was an underestimated package that can give you a run for its money. Now, if you were lucky enough to live in Japan in 2004, you got the Subaru STI. Now, the differences are pretty minimal, other than, you know, it has the same engine, but the XT, it was a base model, to say, given in America, for what their market needed. And now the Subaru STI had all the sports package, the bigger brakes, everything it needed to make it run. Japan was dead set on making Subaru the fastest car in Japan. It was a little powerhouse that cranked out 265 horsepower, and it came with six gear, and it came with Momo stuff. I mean, if you don't know, Momo is just like automotive, I guess, gear performance parts, and they're really commonly known to be in Subaru parts or partner with Subaru. And it kind of sucks that we never really get anything from Japan in the United States, and that goes with the majority of cars. You know, much like the Nissan Skyline, like the ones in the Fast and Furious movies, R32s, R33s, 34s. You know, and what if you really want one of those cars, a Japanese car, I think you have to wait around 20 years for it to be imported and legal into the US. And you know, a lot of people didn't like that. But if you bought the Subaru XT, STI parts could literally bolt right on, so you can make your own STI conversion. And the best thing about that is when you're out on the streets, having fun, cop cars aren't typically gonna look at a wagon for to go pull them over for being loud if they hear tires screeching and an exhaust. But once they see a wagon pull up, oh, it's just probably another mom vehicle. But if you were to pick up any other Subaru four-door vehicle, it would have a wing, a sporty wing, and it would be a dead giveaway as to who was making all that noise. Now, moving on to the third generation of the Forester, it came in 2009, designed by Mamori Ishii, and it started to look more like the crossover that it had deep down inside. The same engines carried forward with the XT. It now came with 225 horsepower, but if you notice, that's a decrease in horsepower. The Forester's mainstream, new updated look was obviously again super safe and pushed sales higher than they had been before. In 2014, we saw the debut of the fourth gen Forester with a it was a mild facelift and even more interior space. So it was pretty much if you hadn't purchased the generation before, you can now get this or you can upgrade. In 2014, it came with a 2.5 XT. No, actually, it did not. The 2.5 original XT now became a 2.0 XT with a 2-liter four-banger making 250 horsepower. The 5-speed manual was now a 6-speed unit, but in America, you couldn't get a turbo for some reason. I'm not sure if they had a turbo in Japan, but they completely got rid of the turbo in it. But the plus side was that Forester now had Subaru's X mode, which was a system that made all the wheels, driving, and stability control able to be able to handle any tricky road, off-road, your typical driving course that isn't on pavement, slippery situations that you would see in the Midwest or places that get snow. The fifth generation, which is the most up-to-date generation, came out in 2019, and it was, of course, as every other year, it got bigger, more comfier, and it is still as safe as it could be. There was a new sport trim package option. If you see one on the road, they'll usually be orange with black accents, but there's not a lot of sportiness to it compared to modern day sport cars. It's more of a, typical, if you're American and need a vehicle, a reliable vehicle that was a crossover with the space, it'll get you from place to place with, the slight sport advantage, but it wasn't any performance advantage to say. For the most part, Subarus and turbos and their sporty looks are kind of dead. We don't see any turbocharged Foresters coming back, at least anytime soon, or Subaru has said anything about it. I know they said in 2020 they would stop producing, I forgot which exact engine. It sounds to me like it's the STI one. I'm not sure on which specific one. But, if you're pondering on wanting a hatchback STI, Subaru did unveil a new concept, but it's going to be a hybrid engine, but it has all the STI suspension goodies you'd expect, 19-inch aluminum wheels and pistons, Brembo brakes, but they really didn't say anything much else. Now, if you want to import a vehicle, as I said, I'm pretty sure it's like 20 years that you have to wait to import a vehicle. But you can actually do that. And depending on the car, it's fairly cheap. I did the research myself. I found a Subaru STI Forester, a 2004, with fairly low mileage. It had under 100K, I would say around 60. And the price point was only at $6,497, which isn't a lot, especially for the year it being rare. And the only charge that they had was the key fob, which is like another, what, $500? Now you have to keep in mind importing fees. Before we get to that, I checked how much it would cost to get the car shipped over here all the way, in Chicago. And it came out to be, shipping fees, $4,470, which, if you really want this vehicle, it's not a lot. It comes out in total to $11,500, and you still have to keep in mind importing fees and all that. From what I saw, it shouldn't be more than 2.5% of the value of the car. So depending on what vehicle you actually want, that shouldn't really make a difference. If you want to get this vehicle or look into it or build your own, you could either import it and do all the research yourself, or get yourself an XT and just slap on STI parts on it. I'm sure you could completely convert it and get a STI bumper on it, but it's not gonna be on the title. But it is essentially already an STI without the STI components. So I say go for it. Thank you for tuning in on this episode of The Chandeliers. Hopefully you get an understanding on why I personally like the Forester, at least the STI version of it. It is, I wouldn't mind having it as a daily driver in the future. It sounds conventional. But hopefully you also understood how Subaru, but hopefully you also understand how Subaru came to be in their uprising with the help of the LGBT community. Thank you.